from Acres USA. You are listening to this special edition of Tractor Time, a conversational podcast where we'll explore sustainable farming, regenerative practices, and the latest innovations in eco-agriculture with some of your favorite farmers and ranchers. I'm your host, Taylor Henry, the owner and CEO of Acres USA. Welcome to Tractor Time. I am joined with Nathaniel Slack and David Hettenbach, and we are here to discuss organic certification in accordance with OCIA. David, do you want to introduce yourself to our audience?
Absolutely. Thanks, Taylor. My name is David Hettenbach. Like Taylor mentioned, I live about 15 minutes west of Viroqua here in Vernon County. I am the inspection manager at Nature's International Certification Services. I've been there for about 8.5 years or so. Kind of worn a few hats during that time. I've done some reviews, but for the most part, inspections. And then for the past couple of years here, I've been the manager at the inspection department. So what I do is interface with both contract and staff inspectors, kind of help provide them with trainings, make sure that they're up to date on the rule and everything. Certainly talk with producers if they have issues with inspections or things like that, and also train new inspectors. So we're always trying to get new contractors, new staff, recruit new staff folks, get more qualified people into the industry and out into the field. So that's kind of what I'm involved in a lot with NICS. And then also, of course, I sit in on our NOP accreditation audits and things like that.
Awesome. Nathaniel, I know you've been involved with a lot of different things in organics, but what's your current role and how are you currently involved with the certification process?
Yeah, I am a contract inspector, so I work with companies such as NICS or also MOSA here in Viroqua to do the on-farm audits and inspection side of things.
Awesome. All right, guys, what is like the number one thing you're seeing out in the field that people are either struggling with or that there's been some changes to rules in the last couple of years that maybe people haven't been updated with?
Personally, what I've seen in the last couple of years was the changes in the rules with origin of livestock and the increase in record keeping required of producers, specifically in dairies. The on-farm feed inventories have been a struggle. Keeping up-to-date and current rations has been a bit of a struggle. But that's what I'm seeing, David.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would definitely echo what Nathaniel's saying in terms of dairy record keeping practices. I think for crop producers, the biggest thing that I've heard at conferences and things this year is questions about the fraud prevention plan, which I know Harriet did mention some of at the webinar a couple weeks ago. And I think there's been a lot of questions as far as farmers, like, how does this fraud prevention plan apply to me? Why am I suddenly getting a fraud prevention plan when I'm not committing fraud? Things like that. And the answer to that is basically SOE, that's the Strengthening Organic Enforcement Rule, and it's the biggest addition to the organic rule that they've done, or changes and additions, since the organic rule became a thing in the early 2000s. So that's the biggest one, I would say. And what are we currently seeing questions about, in addition to those dairy things that Nathaniel mentioned? That's a really big one, is what is this fraud prevention plan? And I would encourage people who are certified to certainly contact your certifier and ask them questions. You know, when you get this form, if it's unclear what it's about, give them a call. Sending you a fraud prevention plan because you were committing fraud, they're sending you a fraud prevention plan because of this increased oversight, which I actually think will be really good for the organic marketplace that is coming with SOE. So the NOP passed this new rule, and now this is how certifiers are one of the steps they're taking to implement that.
I think people always get nervous when we talk about more oversight or more things such as this. So what would be something to ease their mind? What are the positives of it in your eyes? And it's not just adding more work to the producer.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say regulatory creep is a thing and it can be concerning. So I hear those concerns and I don't think they're unreasonable. One thing that I think people should feel better about is the staff at certification agencies in general. I mean, most certification agencies have really tried hard over the years to hire and train qualified staff, retain them, and keep folks around. That's contractors and people on staff. But SOE really codifies the actual requirements. Like, the NOP is now telling a certifier kind of what a qualified person looks like and putting numbers to that training. So as far as from the inspection side of things, which is mostly what I'm involved in, if someone's coming to your farm to do an inspection, they have to have a minimum of 1 year of experience in that scope. So that means you're not going to have someone at your dairy farm or at your row crop operation who has absolutely, they're completely green to that type of production. So I think that would be one piece. Another piece would be that the SOE rules are bringing a lot more people into the organic tent. So there's more operations that are going to be required to be certified. While some of these things can add a little bit of work on the producer end, we definitely understand that. And I think certifiers have to be smart about their enforcement, but it will protect the organic market. And hopefully a lot of these things in SOE that have to do with exporters and importers and the added regulation around that, I think could be really good for the domestic market.
Okay. What's your perspective, Nathaniel, being out in the field? Does this affect you at all with the actual inspection process?
Yeah, in some ways, there is quite a bit more required of producers. I'm in a position as the inspector that you either have the records and review them or you don't, and we move on and I just note it. I think what I've tried to remind folks is that, yes, this is a little more work and it's going to require more effort, but at the end of the day, it is about securing the market. And that ultimately is going to help everybody from producers to certifiers to importers. And we are starting to see the trickle down of this work. I know Harriet touched base on the grain imports that were such an issue that we almost don't even see that as a concern anymore compared to 3-4 years ago.
Got you. One of these questions was, does the National Organic Program now have any enhanced enforcement capabilities under the new strengthening organic enforcement rule?
I guess
from your perspective.
Yeah, I think one of the big things is uncertified entities will now be investigated by the NOP, and that was something that was not the case in the past. And so if an operation is found to be somewhere in the supply chain that is uncertified, a certifier may initially follow up with them and inquire about certification happening if they're interested, things like that. They'll certainly talk to their certified operation and say, that person can't be in your supply chain anymore because they're not certified and don't appear to be exempt. And then if there continue to be issues with those operations, the NOP will be the one investigating them. So that's a major change is that might have happened in the past a little bit, but now it's actually in the federal law, in the statute, that the NOP will be following up with them. I think that's a big change.
Can you explain the strengthening organic enforcement rule at all? Like, is this a new rule that's coming down in 24 then?
Yes.
It takes effect March 19th, I believe.
Okay.
Yes, March 19th is the last day where it's not into effect, and then, yes, so it will take into effect then. It's a lot. It's hard to put the strengthening of organic enforcement rule into just like a 30-second snippet.
Yeah.
It's pages and pages of federal regulation, but the biggest thing that I would say I would take away from it is there's going to be a lot more people in the supply chain that will be required to be certified organic. Farmers and things like that will be required if they are sourcing organic seed, if they're a livestock person, organic feed, to be able to show that they can trace that product that they're using on their farm or seed or whatever it is back to the last certified entity. And that will be a responsibility of everyone. So that's a big step forward as far as the SOE, and that's how it will impact producers. That's that fraud prevention plan that we were talking about. I would say bringing more uncertified entities into certification would be a big one, and then staff qualification. Like, those are two big things in SOE. Those aren't the only things in SOE, but as far as like how it will impact producers and things like that, those are the two biggest ones, I would say. Staff qualification at certification agencies and for inspectors, and requiring more entities to be certified organic that previously may have been exempt.
You had said that it comes into effect March 19th, and then at that point, is anyone selling organically labeled products need to comply, or what's the process for people that are already selling and complying? Is there anything different that they're going to have to do?
Labeling was a big one that was coming down with SOE, specifically non-retail storage labels. I know there's a big debate right now regarding milk trucks. David, correct me if I'm wrong, brokers are now required to be certified. That's a huge one. Historically, they could essentially treat a crop like a stock, and now they have to be a part of the overall plan.
So if someone sells their crop to a broker, grain, fruit, etc., do they need to make sure that the processor that the broker sells to is certified as organic?
No.
Okay.
No is the answer to that. For instance, large grain buyer here in the area, I'm not going to name them, but if I'm growing corn and I sell to them, I'm not required to prove that they are certified. I'm required to document my sales, how much was sold, and all of that stuff on my end. But what I am required to, who I am required to prove is certified is like, if I buy some organic corn seed, was the supplier of that organic corn seed certified organic? I mentioned livestock feed before. So if I'm buying feed for my cattle or whatever livestock I have, I'm going to be required to trace back inputs, like products used that are certified organic on my operation, back to the last certified operation. That's what my certifier is going to ask me about. But as far as who I sell to, I need to have documentation of what was sold, how much was sold, dates of sale. I'm not responsible in the situation you just laid out to prove that the broker then turned around and sold it to a certified organic processor.
Yeah, ensuring that your invoices clearly label the crop as organic, which does sound silly. That needs to be clarified in the new rule, but it was fairly common, specifically with small produce growers. They would slap cabbage on the side of a box and not clearly label it as organic, which could lead to a gap in the supply chain audit.
Yeah. So are organic certification agencies required to perform supply chain reviews and then to verify from the farm through many handlers to the final product?
The short answer is yes.
Yeah.
Certification agencies will have to do supply chain audits, which will involve certification agencies working together. I would say that's another big plus in SOE, is that previously I've been around the organic certifications world for about roughly 10 years. Most certifiers work very well together, provide timely information and responses to investigations. But what SOE actually does is it writes it into, again, the rule that states that certifiers have to work together on investigations, and you must comply with, you must accept decisions made by other certification agencies, and you also must supply information if a certification agency contacts you. Those supply chain audits, like looking back and looking specifically at volumes. Hey, my certified entity bought this many head of cattle from your certified entity. Is this volume reasonable for what you're understand from what you guys have certified at this entity, and reaching out to that other certification agency? I think that's a big thing in SOE that I think really producers should feel better about, because that's definitely one area where fraud can occur, is if the left hand isn't talking to the right hand. So yes would be the answer.
Okay. Continuing down with the certification agency, do farmers need to submit new organic system plan applications every year when they are continuing with the same certification agency?
That's kind of a yes and no, in that most agencies have what they call an update OSP, and it's essentially what are the changes to the current OSP you have, as long as you're not adding a new scope. Most often, from what I've seen with update OSPs, they're a page, maybe two, nothing over the top as far as paperwork required for a producer.
Yeah, I would echo what Nathaniel said. In SOE, that does outline specifically, I think it's 205-406, outlines specifically what the requirements for updating your certification, so what you're talking about, Taylor, is. And it outlines those, but effectively, in reality, like Nathaniel said, most certifiers are going to have an update OSP or some sort of an update form that you're going to complete, and that's going to meet a lot of those requirements. Basically, what the rule says is you have to update your certifier on any changes or deviations from your management plan that happened in the past year, and then any intended changes that you're planning on making to your organic system plan in the current year that you're applying for certification for. The NICS example would be like our current crop OSP, when you apply and you're brand new, is 14 pages. The update OSP is 2 pages. So yes, you do have to declare that. And I would tie all that up into a bow by saying, contacting your certifier when a management change is made throughout the year is the best practice. So not leaving things for like, oh, I got 6 new storage bins and I'm going to wait until my inspection or until they send me some update paperwork. I would say it's always best practice to contact your certifier, call them, let them know if there is a section of your OSP then that needs to be updated. They will inform you what section that is and you can do so. It's best to not leave management changes just sitting there all year until you get to your application time or until you get to your inspection, because you want to make sure that those management changes are, of course, compliant first and foremost. And part of that compliance is your certifier being aware of them. That it's pretty clear in the rule that when management changes occur, you should update your certifier.
Yeah. To stress that, always call your certifier. I've had a few incidents over the years where, specifically in like the dairy world, folks will just be using an input without having informed their certifier, and I've found 2 or 3 prohibited inputs on people's material input lists that they should have called a certifier and had approved. depending on the severity, you could lose cattle, threaten your certification, etc. So definitely always make the effort to call your certifier.
I always tell people, I know no one loves paying their certification fees, no one loves calling their certifier, but you do pay for something. So you pay for a certain amount of customer service, make us earn that money, give us a call, ask us what you're thinking about management changes, things like that, because once you've already done it, like Nathaniel's saying, used an input or done something like that, there's no recourse other than you're going to have to go through a non-compliance process and possibly other adverse actions.
I know one of the concerns that came up in the webinar a lot was imported goods. Is there any pesticide or GMO testing required of imported grain labeled as organic?
I don't believe there is any requirements for GMO, but there is for pesticide and herbicide. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, what I would say is even with SOE, yes, certifiers are required to sample a minimum of 5% of their certified operations every single year. SOE also added into the statute or to the federal law that unannounced inspections are the same number. So a minimum of 5% of your certified operations, if you're a certification agency, have to get samples, and a minimum of 5% have to get unannounced as well too now. Certifiers were already doing that number for the unannounced and for the samples, but the unannounced wasn't specifically in the rule, and now it is. So that's a big plus. There isn't anything in the rule that specifically calls out sampling of imported grains, but what I will say is certifiers typically, they do, base their sampling procedures and things on risk. So imported grains are something that most certification agencies would consider high risk. So that does not mean that every import gets sampled, but it does mean that they're on the radar to be kind of a high risk commodity that may be sampled for pesticides or for GMOs. So yes is the answer, but it's not like imported grains are specifically called out as like these need to be sampled more than anything else, but they'd be part of your 5% of your profile. And if you had operations that were importing a lot of grains, that would be a yellow flag, I'll call it, as far as being a high risk commodity for sampling. So they would potentially be picked. They'd be in the pool to probably get picked more often, but it's not like, oh, this is an imported grain, so we're going to sample it every time.
Yeah.
I guess I would add, the other thing I would add is in SOE, that is a huge change, is that everything that comes into the United States has to have an import certificate, all right? And that's going to be generated on the Organic Integrity Database, which I saw Harriet did a really nice job of going through at the webinar a couple weeks ago. And that import certificate will be generated by a certification agency that certifies the exporter of that product. So you, Taylor, if you wanted to export some grain or something somewhere, you wouldn't be able to just generate an import certificate yourself. You would have to contact your certifier, and they would have to generate that export certificate. They bear the responsibility of, if you've got a 10-acre farm, you're not shipping 500,000 bushels of corn. They have to do some sort of a volume analysis of, like, does this make sense for what this operation can produce? And then whoever is importing that grain cannot accept that grain at port without an import certificate. And that's something the NOP has also really brought customs and border protection in on. So I think I'm not privy to these trainings, but I'm sure there's been a lot of trainings as far as CBP officials coming up to speed with, like, these are requirements for organic grains. I think the export-import thing with SOE, like we were talking, Nathaniel and I were both saying, I think it's going to be great for the domestic organic grain market, because there really is a magnifying glass on that. And I mean, nothing's perfect, but hopefully this is about as foolproof regulatory as they could make it in terms of documentation. Every certifier is aware, both on both ends, the importer and the exporter. Really looking forward to that.
So one of the things we were talking about in the webinar too was that the process of all of these changes would make organics cost prohibitive. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about yet that is important for people to realize that maybe it's new or updated in 23 or 24 even?
Yeah, I think the one thing is that we have this massive new addition to the organic regulation that I think is going to do a lot of positive things here that goes into effect here this month now. There is also another organic rule that's going into effect next spring, so don't panic about it yet. But it's an addition to the organic livestock and poultry practices rule. And I don't want to go into too many details about that today, but what I would say is if you're a currently certified entity, you should definitely reach out to your certifier and ask about that. Certifiers have been doing a lot of good work and trying to get informational stuff out there about this new SOE rule that's going into effect. And I think once that kind of rolls into effect here in March, I'm sure a lot of certifiers, especially ones that have a lot of livestock operations, will be rolling out more information about coming into compliance with these new organic livestock and poultry practices rules. And it's about a lot of things, just like it sounds. Living conditions for organic poultry, living conditions for organic livestock. I think it'll be another really good addition to the rule.
And with anything, with these added rules, added things that need to be done, some people, I think, get concerned that this would just make organic products more price prohibitive. Is that something that you guys are concerned about?
I'm personally not. I try to tell folks at inspection that your farming is a job and a half and your paperwork's another job in itself. I do think that ultimately with the new strengthening of enforcement rules, what we're going to see is a cleaner supply chain and less concerns with maybe subpar products flooding the market. So I hope that we'll actually see more stable and safe prices versus something that would be threatening those prices.
I would echo that. Yeah, my hope is that, just like Nathaniel said, this protects the organic market and makes a better marketplace for our producers here. I would also put a plug in for apply for cost share. There are ways to recoup your costs for your organic certification. And I think Harriet had possibly mentioned this, or maybe this was in some of those answers that you were showing me, Taylor, is that this is going to add to the number of certified entities overall. So while it will add time, which can result in cost for certifiers, hopefully bringing in new operations into the organic certification kind of sphere will add some revenue for certifiers, and that will balance out. It'll probably take a little bit of time. From my perspective, like at NICS, we haven't had to add a bunch of additional costs here for 2024 or anything on to the producers as far as delivering the service that we need to deliver here with SOE going into effect here in a couple weeks. But yes, I would use those cost share resources, use the resources you have to help you deal with that certification cost, and hopefully stabilizing the market will help with the prices that farmers see when they go sell their products.
Anything else on that?
Yeah, I think an unfortunate reality on the producer side of things is with this many changes and with the extra paperwork now required is specifically last season, this season, I expect next season to expect longer inspection times. I think for me personally, I've been seeing an additional 45 minutes to say dairy inspections, not so much in crop world. David, you could probably speak more since you've got an army of inspectors that you can pull from.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yes, I think that dairy inspections, especially, you're looking at an hour, 45 minutes maybe, but at least probably that, maybe more, hour and a half time. As far as adding time, and I would also stress, have your stuff ready. I know it's easy to just say, it's harder to do sometimes. Do some prep the couple days before your inspection. And if you're missing something or something like that, you can contact your certifier and you can talk them through what you're missing. I would just encourage, look everything over the night before. I guess that would be second best practice. Really best practice would be a couple days before. Go through those records, and that can help your inspectors, and that can keep your inspection costs down. I think hopefully with the additional training requirements in SOE for inspectors, this will result in a more qualified inspector workforce, and that means that you're going to have people who know what they're looking at and what they're looking for. So if you have your stuff together, then they should hopefully be able to move through it in a pretty efficient manner.
I feel it's worth a plug too. The NOP does provide free online training through the Organic Integrity Learning Center. I've used that as an inspector, definitely worth looking at as a producer. That might help give you a little bit of an edge as far as your paperwork goes.
What would you say to someone who's listening to this that is thinking about transitioning and they're like, well, I just listened to a half hour of all these things that I have to do and all this paperwork, and like, what is the argument for a producer that's in the conventional world to transition right now? I know you mentioned it. It's half a job of just doing paperwork.
Full job of doing paperwork.
So is there something that is in place that can help producers with that? Because when I hear that, not being completely in the same world as you guys, it's almost unfortunate because I feel like that would be a sticky point or a point of friction for people to actually take the leap into transitioning, especially if they're used to the conventional model where they don't have to do those things.
I think keeping in mind that this is a marketing claim, and yes, there are ecological benefits, and I would even argue family quality of life benefits, but making sure if you're a corn farmer, you need to run those numbers and make sure that those organic premiums are justifying your transition. Also, keeping in mind that the first year it feels almost insurmountable. The paperwork can be quite a bit that first year. Whichever certification agency you choose to go with will, within the confines of the regulations, do what they can to help you along. And keeping in mind that after that initial year, it gets significantly easier. It's updates, it's the record keeping as far as field activity logs or ration changes just become second nature. I've seen a lot of creative ways of keeping records. For instance, a fellow that whenever he would do something on a field, he would take a picture of the implement while holding a date in front of his camera. That was his record, plowed field one on this date. So be willing to be creative. And
I guess with that, I mean, I would add, so anytime that I do anything on my fields, I have an app that's called Onyx Hunt. It was made for hunting purposes, and you could probably find any sort of app like this. But what I do anytime I either mow or broadcast or drill seed, I will just turn the tracker on that app, and it'll track my movements. If I'm out for the day doing field work, it'll track my movements that whole day. It'll have the date stamp on it, and then you can just open that up when you're done tracking and make a little note in there at what you did. Usually it's, unfortunately, you'll forget because you'll jump from one field to another field, so you'll just have to go back and make adjustments. But have you seen anyone using technology like that? Or I know a lot of people have GPS trackers on their tractors. Are you seeing people leveraging technology to make this easier?
Yeah, I would say yes, like to all of those things. Yes, there's folks who have like the John Deere system and things like that in their tractors. Obviously, that's usually bigger farms, but as far as just using, like you said, Onyx or other, some people use Google Sheets, Google Docs, things like that that you can pull up on your phone. Obviously, sometimes that's a generational thing, but I see plenty of folks, young and old, using technology to keep track of some of those things. And as far as your transition question, just to piggyback on what Nathaniel was saying, yeah, fine. If you know an organic farmer in your area, if like Nathaniel, a contract inspector in the area, reach out to them, talk to them, and that kind of helps you get the lay of the land. And if you're considering a transition, I always tell farmers, call a few different certifiers and bounce a few questions off of them. Maybe before you even start your transition, or maybe in that first year of transition, figure out which ones get back to you quicker. Figure out which ones are going to give you a little bit more straightforward answers maybe and things like that. And understand that whatever answer they give you may not be exactly what you were hoping for, but is it straightforward? Is it honest? Is it easy to understand? And that'll make it so when you go to apply, you already have a relationship with someone and you have a kind of an idea of what to expect. So,
as far as record keeping goes, I feel some key language from the rule is that records can be any shape or form as long as they are readily available and easily audited. So if you want to use technology, then the world's your oyster.
Yeah. All right. So we had a lot of good questions when we went through the webinar, and I think a good little lightning round, because I don't think we got through all of them in the webinar, and just getting your guys' perspective on them. So I will shoot a question at you. Don't feel like it needs to be insanely long or long-winded answer. Try to stay as short as you can. We'll run through some of these answers because these are coming directly from producers that were interested in this while we were on the webinar. So here's the first one. I've thought about going organic when we start up our raw milk dairy. I'm interested in the balance between animal welfare versus organic. We had a dairy cow punctured her foot 2 years ago and has to have an abscess drained, and our vet treated her with a course of antibiotic. Obviously, there would have been a withdrawal period after the antibiotic. Beyond the withdrawal period, how long would that cow have to be put out of the organic cohort?
Permanently.
Correct. Yep. That since she was treated with antibiotics, she's no longer eligible to milk organically.
Does her being involved in the herd affect anything? Remaining in the herd?
No. You would keep her in the herd.
You can't obviously let her milk within the same. Yeah,
preventing commingling with milk, you would have to have like a disposition log of where that milk goes. She could, as long as she was managed organically for the last third of gestation, still produce you organic calves.
Oh, okay, so that's important. So she could.
Yeah, essentially, she could be used as a brood cow. I'm not confident in if she could nurse a calf.
It would contact your certifier, but the answer is
probably no.
Right. But yeah, that she would have to be like, and if you were managing her, obviously. If she stayed in the herd, she was a brood cow and things, there'd have to be ear tag. Your inspector would have to be able to identify which cow was non-organic in that herd. And I guess in the hypothetical you put to us, I'm assuming that she's being managed organically. If she was being fed non-organic and things like that, obviously there'd be a whole nother slate of like, okay, that feed has to be kept separate from your organic feed. Can't be in like a bunk with all the other organic stuff and things like that. So we're trying to do lightning round, but the answer is that cow can never milk organically again.
Gotcha. What can be a reasonable expectation from the consumer in the USDA organic certification with the use of chemicals, GMOs, and soil fertility?
Yeah, I mean, soil fertility inputs, an inspector such as Nathaniel is going to show up and go through all of those inputs that you're using. Those inputs are going to have to be approved by your certifier or a materials review organization. So that means that they meet the organic standards as far as any soil fertility inputs. GMOs are not allowed in organics. That doesn't mean that there's zero drift, but it does mean that if there is a crop that's found as GMO, there's an investigation, things that go on with that. So GMOs aren't allowed in organic. The statement of chemicals, to me, that's a little bit of a broad term to respond to. There are chemicals that are used. If they're synthetic, then they have to be on the national list and specifically approved by the National Organic Program. Non-synthetics are generally allowed unless they are listed in the rule. So synthetics are prohibited unless they've been approved. Non-synthetics are allowed unless they've been prohibited.
Yeah, that's some pretty key language within the organic world, is it's not necessarily chemicals, but synthetic versus non-synthetic.
Gotcha. How do other certification programs and labels for, say, regenerative agriculture and the Real Organic Project relate to this? Are they tied to the USDA organic certification in any way? In particular, all of the discussion on regenerative agriculture is very confusing from the consumer perspective.
Yeah, so they're not tied. The key difference regarding labels is that the NOP, the National Organic Program, is a federal law with specific regulations. A lot of the other, I believe regenerative ag uses patent law, if I understand. Maybe I'm wrong on that.
I don't know.
So the big difference is the USDA organic program is a federal law that you're required to follow to produce and use that label. Other labels can essentially come up with whatever rules and regulations they want within the realms of their system.
Yeah, there's federal government enforcement behind the NOP regulation. I don't know very much about those two standards that you just referenced. I mean, I've obviously heard of them being in the industry. I think a couple of them are built off of organics, so like you have to be certified organic to join those programs, but I could be incorrect about that too. But they're not affiliated with the USDA, like Nathaniel said.
Can shipping of organic products be together in a truck with conventional farmed produce?
Well, I guess lightning round answer would be yes, if there are steps in place to prevent commingling and contamination. Those steps would be reviewed every year at your inspection as far as are you going through with these steps, and it would have to be declared in your organic system plan that was happening and how you kept those things separate. Some things like we wouldn't want to see non-organic products stored on top of organic product. They'd be probably physically separated, I would hope, in the truck, labeled, so that way if I got into that truck, I could identify what was what.
What do farmers need to do to ensure their packaging is okay if we package our crops on the farm before sale direct to consumers?
All labeling should be approved by your certifier first and foremost. The rule, without diving into it too deep, has very specific criteria for labeling, including contact information, placement of the organic seal, placement of your agency's logo, things like that. So definitely speak with your certifier or potential certifier on developing that logo and getting that label, approved before you utilize it.
For retailers, can the refrigerator display conventional and organic side by side?
Again, lightning round answer, yes, but there has to be steps in place. I think SOE, and I believe Harriet had a slide on this in the webinar, just regarding deceptive labeling practices. So we wouldn't want to see something where it's like, okay, they're kind of labeled, but I can't really tell. It would have to be clearly delineated. This is where the organic product is. This is where the non-organic product is. Obviously, if those organic and non-organic products were like loose, open, I'm thinking like a crate of apples or something, that may not be a compliant scenario. But if it's things that are packaged and things like that, the short answer would be yes. There has to be things in place, though.
And I don't know if we answered this question earlier, but this is a statement. All organic should be tested for pesticides, etc. Okay, so they're saying all organics should be tested for pesticides, I'm assuming chemicals, etc., etc. Do you think this is soon to be done?
No. Testing, and I can understand the sentiment, but again, we're going lightning round answers here. Testing is very expensive. So we were talking about the cost of organic certification. If all products were required to be tested, it would become cost prohibitive for certifiers, because currently certifiers bear that cost in most cases, and it would also make transactions take a lot longer. I mean, if you had to do testing and things like that. And currently there's only a few labs in the United States that are accredited to do this kind of testing through the NOP, accredited by the federal government to do this. So I'm not even sure if those labs would have the capacity to test all organic products.
Yeah, testing in the organic program is risk-based, as David was saying earlier, with the 5% rule. So in theory, somebody that maybe has questionable practices would be flagged for testing or other concerns such as that. So they're trying to be a little bit more strategic in the testing with the limited capabilities that we have in the system.
We always try to say organic certification is management-based, right? So it's not like a system where it's tested and then it's a yes or no based on the test. It's management-based. That's your organic system plan, your documentation that you have to show that you're following through with those practices you declared, all that kind of stuff.
How does someone become flagged, or how does someone become on the list?
We can't tell you. No, I'm just kidding. I think it depends on what you're producing. Obviously, there's high-risk commodities if you're doing things like importing. If you're doing things like basic things, like you have organic and non-organic production. It's not a personal statement to you, the producer, that the certifier thinks you personally are a high-risk human being. It's them pointing out that your operation has a number of organic control points that are high-risk. I think a nice thing about the certification, as organics has grown up, it's not like how the certifier feels about you personally. It's that they have these criteria that determine risk. And that's a good thing, because you don't want personal relationships or things like that to seep into a regulatory world. It needs to be like, are you doing things that are high risk or not? So if you're a producer that has a lot of production of both non-organic and organic, don't take it personally if you get sampled. It's just that that's considered a kind of high risk. I said what you're growing could also be determining that. Things past organic adverse actions. So if you maybe have had some struggles in the past with compliance, that could also push you into a higher risk category. And that's basically most of our categories as far as what pushes you into that. So at NICS, I can only speak to that, but you know, our final reviewers, our inspectors and things like that, they're the ones that are looking at that risk. Final reviewers look at it every single year and kind of determine what it should be. And if they need to, they ask the inspectors about what the situation on the ground looked like.
So something that I've thought about, because I've heard this in passing where a neighbor will say, well, they're not organic, but they say they are. So do people call in and make a complaint, or do you see that often where you have the neighbors fighting with the neighbors, and then, but then it probably comes into your system and the certifier would be the person you go talk to, I would assume?
I mean, it's not unheard of. Every industry has its horror stories of the neighbor that just swings his sprayer boom across the fence because he doesn't think what you're doing is valid. In my experience, I don't think that it is like a measurable or quantifiable concern. I don't think there's a ton of guys out there just looking to get their neighbors because they don't agree with their production method.
Yeah, I can only speak for Nick's. Yes, people do sometimes call us and just, hey, Taylor was down the road seeing him out there spraying or something like that in his organic field. I only want to speak for Nick's, but I trust that other certifiers are probably doing the same thing. Is that doesn't necessarily mean that you end up with a full investigation on your farm and things, right? Typically, it helps if someone is willing to give us more detail, put their name to it, kind of stand behind it, not just like an anonymous call and tip in and that triggers a whole investigation. There needs to be some sort of substance to this. So I'm sure most certifiers are doing that, and we do our due diligence to make sure that we're not just chasing people around because some neighbor was unhappy about them or something.
And an investigation isn't necessarily a personal attack. I can think of at least one anecdotal incident where a gentleman had a neighbor that he disagreed with, and he came to his dairy farm and dumped a bottle of penicillin into his tank, and the investigation essentially found that, like, it's clear this was at too high of a concentration for you to have treated a cow and then milked her into the tank. So he didn't lose any cows. He still lost the tank.
Jeez.
So an investigation isn't necessarily a negative thing. It can also liberate you from any wrongdoing.
Yeah. And that's an example of the guy, that producer's management was organic. So they were managing per their plan and everything. So it wasn't necessarily like here's a test that came back positive for something you shouldn't use. They didn't lose their certification status because that producer had management practices in place and they were following through on those.
Okay, we only got a couple more. If I sell pork and chicken eggs at a farmer's market or online and I sell less than $5,000, I don't have to be certified, but can I label it as organic?
If you're selling it directly at your farm, possibly, but you can't use the seal. If you're selling a live animal, you can sell it, you can say it's organic, but you can't, then once it gets processed into cuts and things like that, there has to be proof that that processing facility was certified organic. If you're under $5,000, you can't use the USDA seal. And if you were at a farmer's market, and this is one I'd want to dig into a little bit more, but I believe that it has to be sold from on farm, and yes, you can't use the seal or anything like that. So if you were selling it as cuts or thing, you can market it as I feed organic grain and things like that, but the actual finished product couldn't be certified organic, no.
And I believe, too, with the $5,000 exemption, you're required to keep all of the same records.
That's correct.
So in theory, the NLP could show up to your farm and audit your records to ensure that you are still doing everything correctly within the exemption.
Is the $5,000 limit per product, or can they have multiple products under $5,000?
Total organic claims. So you couldn't say sell $5,000 in asparagus and then $5,000 in onions. It would be a total of $5,000.
Got it. What if my certifier is asking for the full plan every year? What should I do?
Well, if they're asking for you to fill out a completely new OSP every year, I would probably ask your neighbor if they have a different certifier and maybe pick up the phone and call a few other certifiers.
And finally, do retail stores and co-ops need to be organic to hold and store organic seed and other products?
Retail would be exempt as long as they are not opening and repackaging, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, it's one where I don't want to give just like a general answer, because I would say contact a certifier about that one, because it kind of depends on what they're doing. And just giving a general answer probably would not suffice.
All right. Those are all the questions. Anything else you can... here's one I'll throw at you. Try to do a little bit of a quick response, I guess. If I want to... because I'm not organic right now on my beef operation, what would be the steps for me to transition into an organic seal?
Well, first and foremost, you would need 36 months of field history as far as inputs and seeding. So that would be seed tags, invoices, things like that. At that point, what is most common with beef is your current herd becomes essentially brood cows, similar with our question on the dairy animal treated with antibiotics. They could be managed for the last third of gestation and drop organic calves, and so that next generation could be what would carry the organic seal. David, do you have any more to add to that?
No, that's about it, other than, find a certifier you want to work with and start asking them the questions as far as, like, some of the stuff we've been talking about. Ask them, see how they communicate. If you're not happy with it, there's, I think, close to 80 different certifiers. So try a different one.
Awesome. Anything else, guys?
No, I think that's about it. I appreciate the opportunity to sit down with you this afternoon here.
I appreciate you, David from Nix, and Nathaniel from being a self-employed contractor. I actually didn't even know that was possible. So maybe that's listening can... That's kind of a nice little side hustle for maybe even a farmer.
Yeah, the industry is desperate for more inspectors, specifically with the folks that have on-the-ground experience. It's nice to have somebody with some dirt under their fingernails. But yeah, appreciate getting to come in and chat with you guys. We should do this again.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to Tractor Time, a podcast production of Acres USA. Find us on Spotify, Apple, Google Play, and other popular podcast platforms. Find other Acres USA media and learn about Acres USA events at acresusa.com. We'd like to thank Acres USA staff for their contributions to producing this podcast. This episode was edited and engineered by Kennedy Strosol of Acres USA. We're grateful to our guests for taking the time to talk with us about their experiences.